A nebula of colors swirl around the borders of grandiose letters. The letters form the logo Anscape. A city skyline rises above dilapidated warehouses. On a subway platform, a hooded man with long red dreads waits as a train rushes by. Chris Moten.
I know what I want, and I know where I want to be.
On a stage, the man with dreads thrusts his hips as he plays two keyboards.
It is a little tough having to perform with celebrity artists.
Devin Fix Taylor.
I played for a tour with over 100 celebrity artists. It's fun, you know what I'm saying? I love being on the road. I love touring. I love seeing different cities. When I first started traveling, I used to get caught up in the hype of being with the artists, kind of piggybacking off of what they had. I had to realize that that wasn't mine.
You should definitely be trying to find something that is your own.
Cassius Jay.
I don't want to be 50 years old trying to play on the road with Justin Bieber or somebody. It's not going to work.
The exposure that we gain from that doesn't amount to the gift that God gave me and my destiny.
Anscape presents. A man strolls through a neighborhood in high tops and red shorts. A hand loads a cassette tape into a boombox and presses the play button. A film by Sade, Clack, and Joseph.
Atlanta is the mecca of the South.
We come from a place where we do what we want, how we want, when we want.
Atlanta is city, but Atlanta is country at the same time.
There's a lot of confidence that comes from the culture of the city. We're defiant, we're disruptive, we're passionate.
And for the city to be thriving right now on every front, from music to films to art and all aspects of culture, it's good. You know what I'm saying? We're still here having fun.
Atlanta is just where it is. Everyone's trying to get here.
For us to be a region to where there's no like real like major record labels here, like in LA and New York. And for us to move like this, we grinding.
You ain't heard of Ludacris, you ain't heard of Outkast.
TLC, Goody Mob, Toni Braxton, Usher.
Like they created the sound here. I feel like every city duplicates us.
It's so much great music coming out of Atlanta. It's really not a sound that is specific to just one genre. It's a DIY market in the sense of building music in their homes, but it's great music.
You make a room of people move in Atlanta, that means you can move the world.
Everybody has their own idea of how they want to contribute their music to the world, and this is just mine. Trap jazz is a movement. Trap jazz is a sound. And more importantly, trap jazz is a band. Of a lot of friends and brothers that I started with from the beginning. Started first with Devin Sticks Taylor, and then adding on Cassius Jay as the world-renowned producer.
We bridge the gap between jazz and hip-hop.
The three of us, along with a lot of friends and family, is a collective as the band, Trap Jazz.
It always come back to 3000 that the source was.
If the South got something to say, that's all I got to say.
That sparked something.
A title appears in gold letters against a black background. Trap Jazz, Prelude, Creating a Genre. A quaint yellow house sits at the edge of a forest. Chris's home studio, Decatur, Georgia. In a basement bathed in red light, Chris rolls and lights a blunt.
Trap jazz is exactly what you think it is when you say it. It's trap, and then there's jazz. Eclectic improvisation mixed with, like, street gutter sounds.
Chris sits at a home studio setup. On a MacBook, he watches a black and white video of a jazz band.
I was listening to A-Train, because I'm going to trap that out. Because that's basically just trap jazz. That's a trap beat, and that's jazz music. Real jazz, not like a form of jazz, you know? So that makes a difference. That's gonna be tough, because they swinging, and they're doing a different beat than what we do nowadays. They're like, I can move it around. I just gotta find the right beat to go with it.
Chris scrubs through GarageBand with one hand and his keyboard settings with the other. Hey. broadly and bobs his head to the beat.
It's already, like, exciting me.
Cassius Jay, a hefty man, sits in a studio. He has a ponytail and gold neck chains.
I just remember Chris coming up with the whole idea. I ain't even have a clue how we was gonna do this. All I knew was I know how to make beats.
No more than a week after, I felt like trap jazz was something that I could do. I called Cassius. I knew it was going to be right in line with the sound that Atlanta loves, because if you don't know Cassius, we're losing, like, probably going to be the next king of trap.
His albums flash by.
I produce for a lot of well-known artists like Future, Migos, Bankroll Fresh, Young Thug.
Jazzy Faye, CFO of Shonuff Records.
He's beyond his years in music, especially.
Like, Zaytoven, Grammy Award-winning producer.
He a real church musician that can play like, you know, like a fool.
And then when you hear him play, you be like, this dude got to be in his 40s or something, you know what I'm saying? Because he's just, his musical palette is just, you know, magnifique. It's something special.
I called Cassius and I was like, bro, like, I need some beats. I just need whatever you would give to, you know, Future, Young Thug, Gucci, like, whatever you would give to them, give that to me, like, give me, like, five of them.
He's like, well, just send me all your whack beats. Beats that you know you ain't gonna give to nobody, just send it to me. I'm like, I promise you I'll make something up.
When I got them, I just, like, ripped them in, like, 2 weeks, and I sent them back.
I was fucking amazed. I was like, how in the hell did you come up with that? Like, how? I didn't even believe you did it. I was like, I'm finna come over to your house and see this shit.
Automatically feel like it's about to turn up. Like, okay. They almost vibe it to it. Females will be like, you know, okay. They don't hear no words yet. But then we get here. Immediately, even you just change your vibe. Because it's like, now you're trying to follow what this is saying. But this is already saying something to you. What is the music saying?
In studio with Cassius and Jazzy, hundreds of dials spread across the mixing board.
First song he gave me, I took it to Jazzy Faith, and Jazzy went crazy. Like, this is the new shit, this is the next shit.
He was like, this what you did over his beats? This what you did? I was like, yeah, that's my idea of trap jazz.
In a recording room, a man with dreads and a backward cap plays the drums. Devin Sticks Taylor.
I play for some pretty cool artists, Zendaya, Mary J. Blige, Usher, Jagged Edge, Backstreet, Monica, Justin Bieber. Shout out to JB, man. I appreciate it. Love you, boy.
In a studio, Chris and Cassius dap it up over a keyboard.
Brother, how are you? Good to see you. Look nice.
Great. Chris and Cassius linked up. They did some stuff. Chris was just like, man, you need to play drums on it. He's like, little bro, we really need to start a band. Playing behind artists and stuff is cool, but don't you think it'd be cool if, like, we played our own shit?
Devin's drumming. I need that because in trap jazz, he had this sound when he played. Everybody in the room is just like, up to that point, I hadn't seen no other musician make people move like that.
Trap is a language. They're playing at a very high level. It's not just, I could do it, so I'm just like, no, let's practice, let's get it sounding, let's put this black music on one of the highest pedestals we can.
A man with a scruffy beard sits at a piano. Terrace Martin, Grammy-nominated artist and producer.
Chris is a monster because he's a hell of a musician.
Man, his sound is like no other. The way he mixes certain sounds and the way he plays certain things and even just his arrangements. His mind is amazing, man. God really, really blessed him.
A man in a leather jacket speaks. Jay Fly, artist and producer.
Chris was actually a prodigy. Like, he got awards as a jazz pianist. He has natural talent, a creative ear, but he also has the theory. Those elements in one human body's like, oh, my God.
We got to get the music out there to get people used to trap jazz. Then after that, we just try to get our stuff played on the radio. But what would we play it as? Because it won't fit in smooth jazz. It won't fit in jazz fusion. It won't fit in standard jazz.
Chris is like, man, I'm finna try this trap jazz. I can't wait to tour him because I know it's going to be big. And I was like, well, look. I was like, you do the work. Here go the beats. I pay for the sessions. I get it mixed. I pay for the musicians. I do the financial part. You just do the music part.
Me, him, and Cassius, we booked like 3 days at Glow in the Dark Studios. He already had like a lot of songs already, you know, tracked out and mapped out. But, you know, he gave me creative control to put my own drum parts and everything on it. So we came up with everything together, one studio session.
The main reason I'm doing it is for musicians. it's definitely important to me to leave something behind. My mom bought me this $500 little Yamaha. I started making beats, and I would take it to school and make beats and plug it up to the speaker in the room. I was literally, like, making trap beats. That, you know, mixed with jazz, I think that really probably was the beginning of, you know, what we call trap jazz.
Chapter 1, Our Father. In a yard, thick smoke wafts from a grill. Young men jump for a football as little girls play patty cake. Cassia's Family Barbecue, Decatur, Georgia.
Now you can't do nothing.
Get him, grandma. Because, you know, you don't talk like that. You've been raised in the church. You know right, man.
Let's see you do it.
Let me see you, mate. Hey.
Hey,
out of all my friends, I'm like the big dog. And they follow me because I'm their big brother. I was the one out the whole group, out of Devin and Chris, decided, you know what, I don't want to just be a church musician no more. I want to be a producer.
Indoors, Cassius sits with his four kids.
Right now today is Father's Day. It's my day. And these are my beautiful kids. We're hanging out. Having kids kind of slowed me all the way down. Even though I was in the church and stuff, it slowed me down when I had kids because it gave me something to live for.
You got a little girlfriend?
No.
So you gonna leave your shirt off? Show your muscle? Your muscle.
No, let's see your muscle.
Show your muscles. Come on, turn around and show your muscles. Show your muscles. Hey.
The stuff I learned from my dad, I put it in my kids. My dad is the reason why I'm a musician.
Cassius's mom takes a bundle of photo albums to a dining room table. She sits down and sifts through photos.
His sister, not the other family. My husband was in the ministry, and they needed music in the church. So my husband, he let my boys pick out the instrument that they wouldn't mind playing.
Like drums, everybody could play drums. Bass wasn't cool enough. I feel like bass players real laid back, and I ain't got no laid back spirit. Like, I'm real hype. So I was like, I want to play the piano, the organ. And organ was the first instrument I sat on.
Everybody looked up to his dad, too. Would love to hear him sing and preach.
I'm just like my dad. I'm the same person. Everybody said I act like him, I dress like him. My dad was real flashy.
My husband died suddenly. He wasn't sick. No one could believe it. I was thinking I was going to the doctor to be with him. But when I got there, they told me that he had passed.
He was trying to get out the car to ask for help, but he fell out of the car and passed away. And they told us he had a massive heart attack. We thought the world was over. And my brother, he's like, what in the world? Like, where do we go next? Like, what's the next step?
A sibling wipes a headstone.
If it weren't for my daddy, I wouldn't be where I'm at right now because my dad, the one who put the whole music into us, you know? If it weren't for my dad, I would not be a musician, first of all. I wouldn't be a producer. My dad, the one told me I was going to do this. He prophesied it. Every hit record I get on the radio, I come up here and play it for my dad. Point blank, period. I don't know if he can hear it or not, but I play it. And nobody ain't gonna never have to struggle the way he had to do. Like, none one of us.
The family alternates between smiles and tears as they sprinkle red rose petals on Jeffrey's grave. A blonde woman holds Cassius as he cries, and his mother puts a hand on his back.
His dad had told me an hour before he passed that Josh would make it. Josh was gonna make it.
Family members bow their heads.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
In a small chapel, Devin carries a polished cymbal to his drum kit and attaches it. A monument outside reads Shiloh Baptist Church, Devin's Church, Jonesboro, Georgia.
I found was blind.
With a trio, Devin plays the drums behind a man in a gray striped suit, Pastor Taylor, Devin's dad.
Amen. Can I just get you to just stand out of that seat right now and just begin to start thanking God and say, Dr. Jesus, make everything all right. I don't care what you're going through, what your problem is, Dr. Jesus will make everything all right. Do I have anybody in this house who don't mind?
My dad got called into the ministry, and so
I started planning church in 2003.
I think I was around like 9 or 10.
That opened up the door for me to do everything that I'm doing now.
Sing it one more time for me. Come on, Melvin. Oh,
men and women stand up from their seats and clap along to the music.
That's where I got my start. You know, that's where I was able to do whatever I pretty much put my heart to. You know, in church, there's not really no rules. Like, that's when you're really able to play freely and, like, open yourself. It's kind of like jazz. Like, it's not structured. Because even with church, you still got to go to rehearsal. You still got to learn the music. It's still a gig. It's still work at the end of the day.
Pastor Taylor taps and bobs his head. He rips into a microphone and the audience takes their seats.
You may be seated in the presence of the Lord. Amen. God bless you all on this day. Thank you. Thank you. I want to say happy Father's Day. All the men stand up. All the men stand up. Amen. We salute the men today on Father's Day. Amen. Ladies, come on, make some noise. Make some noise real loud, ladies. Scream in here. Amen. Like it's your favorite entertainer. Scream in here like it's Luther Vandross or whoever it is that you may listen to. Scream and give these men a hand clap. Amen. Thank you, God.
A bearded
Thank
man sits in the crowd. So Deacon Amen. Scott Williams, Amen. Interfaith drummer, Devin's uncle.
I started noticing Devin's talent when I used to play with his father. I went to his father and told him, man, you know, I like playing the drums. I really do. I love them. But your son is anointed to play the drums.
Sure. Notice, you know, whenever he's playing, he's smiling. You know what I'm saying?
He's
you with that smile. I believe you will not catch him not smiling while he's playing the drums, and because he loves it.
First gig was with my parents. It was with my father, with his group. He had a gospel group, and it was called Interfaith.
As Devin was coming up, I was in groups, and Devin was there watching our drummer, Scott, and he was sitting right there up on Scott, right there looking dead at the drums, and Scott had to say, back up a little bit, Devin, back up a little bit.
Toddler Devin drums on a hi-hat.
There was a song that Interfaith used to do. It gives the drummer a special little part in it where he can do his thing.
He had to be about 8 or 9 years old.
Yeah. He was just like, man, you're not ready yet, son. he said, Dad gonna let you play. Yeah.
His father finally gave him a chance. He said, okay, we gonna put this in the routine. We made up this little skit, like, Scott, you just gonna act like you just tired. You're tired playing the drum. And we was doing a concert. Devin right there, right next to me, like he always would be. And I stood up from the drums and I told him, I can't do this no more, man. I'm tired. So he said, man, I need a drummer. Any drummers in the house? And lo and behold, little Devin raised his hand. I can do it, Dad. I can do it. Gets on the drum set, get to the part where the drummer gets his solo. And I'm talking about he had the whole house amazed.
I would follow him everywhere, and then I would just play that one song. And that was like my first gig ever, you know, playing with my dad.
His father went halfway around the world. Devin is going all the way around the world.
In a hazy room, adult Devin plays his kit with his head down and his eyes closed.
When I heard Devin, I was like, whoa, like, I want you to be my friend forever. And I stuck with him. I never would let him get away from me.
He was playing organ for us. I was around like 13 or 14 at the time. And Cassius, he used to always tell me, like, bro, you are killing, bro. Like, and you know, I was a little kid, like, thank you, man, all hype, just smiling. And then he told me, he was like, man, playing in church is cool, but bro, you can go so much further with your gift, with what you're doing.
No matter how big we got, he called me Big Buddy. Big bro, what we doing today, Big bro? Big bro, where we going? I just go pick him up.
I remember Cassie used to come pick me up from school like every other day. I used to get in the car with him. We would ride to the studio. We would be recording, or he had me doing like gigs and stuff. He was just introducing me to people around town.
With Devin's sticks in hand, he goes downstairs to Chris's basement.
I introduced sticks to every drummer, every artist, because I knew he could outplay everybody. He was young. And that was exciting, to see a young musician outplay the oldest cats in the world. I'd take him over to Chris's house, a little shed with Chris.
Sometimes they'd come to my house, everybody know I had this basement. I had like two drum sets, a bass rig, a guitar rig, 5-6 keyboards, all this stuff, you know, and everybody would just come there and play. So a lot of times, Devin and them would come by. And then I realized there's something about this cat, like he had this sound. And every time he played a rap beat, everybody in the room would like, they started moving. And it was like, you could be a dope drummer, but it's hard to make everybody in the room move at the same time.
I describe my sound as real aggressive.
Devin's rapid hands blur.
I like for people to feel what I'm playing, to feel my energy.
I don't think I ever want to do a trap jazz show without Devin, because he just sounds just like what we need.
Silhouetted against an orange curtain, Devin plays imaginary drums. He beams behind a real drum kit, and his phone bounces on a snare drum as he jams. At Chris's home, framed portraits show the Moten family. In a dimly lit basement with bongos in one corner, he plays on a grand piano. His face and hands shift in and out of shadows. On a bookshelf, a photo of Chris's grandfather sits in a heart-shaped frame.
My name is called Carrie Lee. My grandfather's first and middle. I've always liked that. The second melody, the...
A photo shows Chris's grandfather smiling as Chris reads off a sheet of paper with a mic in hand.
It really makes me think, like happy times and some sad times, too. So I like that song so far. I'm not even finished with it, but it's still fun to play.
A sign above a warehouse reads, New Bethel, Chris's dad's church, Decatur, Georgia. Inside, Chris and his dad meet by musical equipment.
What up, old man?
Hey, man, what's happening?
Good, how are you?
Just got back down.
I did.
Your phone work?
Sometimes. Sometimes it works, sometimes it don't. Actually.
Where you been?
New York.
I go?
Most of the time, New York, based out of New York, and then
going everywhere else outside of that.
It's been fun. You enjoy your Father's Day without me? Your favorite?
Yeah, right.
Chris sets up a keyboard.
You like it?
I could do a lot with it, yeah. Pads, faders, you know, we like all that stuff.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
That's the next generation. Yeah.
You enjoy your new organ?
Yeah, man, I love it. I think it's nice, too.
Let me open it up a little bit. Let's see what it sounds like.
Oh, it sounds good.
Open it up a little bit. Hey! Not shy.
You don't feel nothing. Oh, it's
yes,
nice.
Lord.
What we gonna play? Yeah, you get yours on, we play something together.
I just wanted to hear you open up a
so
little
I can
bit.
Learn
that's
something.
Thing.
You can teach me something crazy. Before you go back on the road.
That's that aye.
Okay.
My dad, you know, of course, is an organist, very popular organist in the church. And my mother was a very popular singer.
Yeah, I mean.
Our house was filled with music. Chris grew up with I have an organ in the living room. We were constantly in church because I was constantly playing or his mother was singing. So he grew up in church.
I can't do that.
Chris's fingers rapidly flutter on a keyboard.
Yeah, I remember that one. I remember that one.
Remember that one.
Yeah. He would always sit on the organ with me or sit on the drums. I bought both of my sons drumsticks. Sometimes I think it was a mistake because the furniture turned out to be a drum.
That was the first thing I did, and then out of nowhere, my grandfather was like, you got enough drummers in the family. Go, why don't you go play that? Why don't you go play piano? And he literally forced me to get on the piano.
Chris's dad is bald and wears a gold neck chain. He grins with gapped teeth and bobs his head as he plays the organ. A woman with braided hair sits at a dining room table, Chris's mom.
I remember going to his room, and he'd have the radio on. And he'd be listening to the radio and playing behind the radio. So when that started happening, I just knew, you know, he had that connection. It was all God, you know.
Chris reaches from his keyboard and daps it up with his dad. Cassius arrives, then gives Chris's dad a long hug.
You know I'm old.
You can play, man. You got it. I still need got some stuff to learn, I see, huh?
Every piano player, every organist from Atlanta, Georgia, looked up to Chris' dad. And I just happened to meet Chris at the time. And then after I met Chris, realized who his daddy was. And his daddy was my daddy's best friend. So then we just started, like, showing each other things.
I tried to stop playing more when you came up here.
I look like my daddy, don't I?
All of this look like your dad. What's up, man?
That's crazy, man.
Look at you.
Just like all producers wanted to be like Zaytoven, all the musicians wanted to learn how to play the organ. Just like you.
Chris' daddy has a style where, in the church, we call it a Kojic style, a Church of God in Christ style. So it's like real, real, real churchy.
Josh is just like another son. I haven't seen him since he was a kid.
So I've always known Cassius. I know him as Josh, like I know that's his producer name, but I just know Josh. We grew up together. His father sang like praise and worship while my father played organ.
Cassius sits down and plays the organ as Chris's dad beams over his shoulder.
Of course, your course was...
Chris' daddy knew my whole family, my mama, my grandma, all my aunties. If it wasn't for him being friends with my dad, I would not know Chris more.
Chris and Cassius dap it up. Their younger selves jam in a living room.
They just clicked. I guess it was the music that drew them together. He had somebody that understood him.
Decatur, Georgia.
This is Decatur, straight from the deck. Decatur, where it's greater.
Decatur is very much like the hood. You know, then there's a good part of it, too. There's a lot of families. You know everybody in the neighborhood. You know everybody the street over. All the families know each other. All the parents know each other, you know. Keep a lookout for all the kids.
Chris and his dad stroll up to a brick house.
This is the house I grew up in, the house I know most for growing up in. It's moved around a little bit, but this is the way all the memories were created. This is where I got my first keyboard.
Your first drum set.
First drum set. This is even where piano first came into my life. There was a piano in the living room. And as crazy as it seemed, we was having church every Sunday in the living room. And so just family members would come over. And just like church normally, you know, they open the doors, everybody come in with their church clothes on, sit down at regular chairs, set up like it was a really, you know, a real service, you know?
Chris steps backward up the driveway.
I remember just being in his driveway. It was a very sentimental moment. I don't know. I didn't know what was happening, but I know my mother had gathered us up and, you know, it told us a few things, but we being young, 12, 13, and then, you know, I didn't want to believe whatever was getting ready to happen, but it seemed like it was really eerie. After my dad was like, you know, I'm basically leaving for a while and be gone for a while. I remember after that, it just didn't seem real.
In a flashback, young Chris stands alone on the porch as he watches his dad walk away from him. Chris looks on with a sullen expression. In the present, Chris stares off in space.
And I probably was like 10 years old, maybe 9, 10. So at that point in my life, I felt a responsibility to like really take over. I didn't think my mom could tell me what to do, because I was like, you know, I'm the man of the house now. Dad said I got it. He ain't here, so I'm in control. She like, he didn't mean that. If you really think you're the man of the house, you need to be paying some bills. You know what I mean? So
you settled down, dude.
Yeah, I settled down. And I mean, I did. You know, when I turned like 14, 15.
I spent 20 years in prison from 1996 until 2016. It was a very difficult time for all of us, my entire family. I sent Chris music as often as I could.
Chris' daddy used to send Chris cassette tapes of him playing, because of course he was incarcerated.
In a bedroom, young Chris plays a cassette tape, then plays his keyboard.
Hey Chris, check out this new song. I redid Amazing Grace and I changed it to Grace Amazing. Kind of make it my own. Watch the change right here.
He and his dad play.
And flow right into it, the solo. I'm gonna do the organ first.
Now here's the piano. I was thinking about you when I did the piano, since you like the piano more than you like the organ.
Not learning music with him versus him sending tapes and talking on a tape and telling me how it's supposed to sound versus him being right there next to me. That was tough. Along with just not growing up, you know, without a father right there.
Now I'm gonna come back with the synth. Watch the bend.
He was just telling us, like, these are the chords, one by one, A-flat, C, E-flat. Now the triad, of course, A-flat major chord. He'd just tell us stuff like that.
He would send me back cassette tapes, and he'd have 1,000 questions. And I would always have one answer, figure it out. Because if I tell you, you're not going to get it.
My dad was always like, even though you want to know what I play and play like me, you know, always have your own sound. Don't ever want to be like nobody else. Don't ever want to sound like nobody else. You know, just develop something that's your own off of, you know, what you learn.
Me looking from the outside in, I could say his father was and still is, an awesome musician. So when I look at it, how many things could he have shown Christopher? There were a lot of things that I know he could have been taught, or he could have learned from his dad.
I think I was the last person you probably talked to before you actually maybe walked away and left. You know, like the last time we saw him before we would see him incarcerated and have to visit him. I think the last time I saw him before then, it was like watching him walk out of the driveway, kind of confused. But I know the last thing he said to me was like, everything's going to be all right. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Did I lie?
You didn't lie. It wasn't all right for a long time, you know.
But it's
such
as
life. But you got to go through those things in order for it to be all right. You'll never know what all right is if you don't see it all the way through.
Exactly.
And I'm really glad that we did. We did. That made a difference to me. Yeah. It's a good father. I appreciate it. Love you.
Outside the house, Chris hugs his dad.
I think that's always going to be a part of Chris that is untouchable. Because I think he closed himself off in many ways while I was gone. Because he didn't know how to deal.
In the past, Chris's dad walks off toward a sunset.
Holding it in definitely does seem better a lot of times. You're more comfortable when you're holding it in because nobody knows. As long as you don't deal with it, you think that it'll just go away, you know, but it's not going away. It's actually festering and growing, you know. So as easy as it was to hold it in, at some point I would have to let it out, you know, and deal with it.
Kevin McKinnery, old friend.
Chris is like me. We don't show emotion and stuff like that. Chris will more or less put in his music. He don't have to say it, but you'll hear it. People sit back and say, oh, music is just music. No, music is life to us. Because without the music, we'd probably be somewhere we don't want to be.
Chris and his dad walk down an empty street.
I definitely do think Chris has the capability to be the leader. I know things may get hard for him as far as being able to push certain things because he has a million and one things going on right now. So, you know, you kind of got to stay on top of him. Like, yo, Chris, don't forget, bro. We got to do this.
Beethoven.
The hurtful part for musicians is the money or the compensation. As a musician, it feels good to play the music in front of all these different people. But when it comes down to the money, it's like, it's not, it's almost not worth it.
I was gonna go to Whiskey and just play there and have fun, but then they called and said they needed somebody to play. So now it's turning to a gig, turning to work now. So I ain't got no choice, really. I want to make some money, to pay some bills.
Most gifted people, they're one track mind. Their mind is on their gift. Their mind is on what they want and what they're dreaming of.
Behind a venue at night, Chris lifts a roll-up door.
Christopher is not a selfish person, but I see where sometimes his gift will cloud him of other things that are going on in life.
What's the ETA for the Cats? 8:45? Yeah. Cool. He's supposed to start at 9. He probably gonna start till 9:30.
Chris drinks beer.
What about that?
When it comes down to music and career-wise, nothing's easy. You have to really put in your dues. Playing, going out, marketing yourself. If anybody ever tell you that that's easy, they're lying.
Can you grab that stand? Please, thank you. I'm sorry.
Chris tries to fit two keyboards into the trunk of a small car.
You want to go backwards? I didn't want to be on top of your staff. Maybe I can hold it in front of me.
Being on tour with all these celebrities, you know, it's fun to do that, but it's a job.
Cafe 290, what's happening? How's everybody feeling on this Friday evening? Y'all all right? And you all sit back and enjoy yourselves.
It's very important to me that when I'm gone, like, there's something that y'all are gonna say. Like, if it's one thing Chris wanted to be carried on, what would it be? And it's gonna be an easy answer for everybody. It's gonna be trap jazz. Like, keep that shit going.
In Chris's basement, he plays a trap jazz original called Boot Up.
With this particular song, the melody was the first thing I came up with. Whitney Houston does this one run that everybody stole. Like, if you are a great singer and you, like, riff a lot with your voice, or try to be acrobatic or whatever, you're gonna do this run all the time. You know what I'm saying? So I wanted to find something that people can relate to and that they can sing. And then when I'm not doing that, then I'll play some other stuff and go crazy. But for that melody, when I was playing it, I just heard it like that. And I knew that wasn't it. It's like, it's got to be more. And I repeat that. I knew that I needed to find something. If people are gonna like trap jazz, they have to be able to sing it. Because the reason why they don't listen to jazz now is because they can't sing it. They don't understand it. It's too much going on. It's like all it is. Well, you can't sing that. No, it's all a part of, like, making sure that, to me, make sure people feel like what they would normally feel in a rap song. Like, if they don't feel that, they're not gonna label it the same type of music. You know, so if they feel like this is a rap song and, like, some girls is up on the couches and the chairs twerking and shaking their ass, like, I like that, you know, because I feel like they're doing what they would normally do in a rap concert. And if they're doing that at a jazz concert, we've accomplished something.
In studio, Chris and Devin play Scream, a trap jazz original. A clean-shaven man in a snapback hat sits in studio. Pretty Ken, artist.
Music is a feeling. So when you're trying to mesh two different feelings together, you really have to find something special. You really have to find the groove. You really have to find it. Because jazz is such a calming coolness. It's the unstructured playing and just, it's that movement of the music. Trap, it's nothing moving. It's just a vibe. So you're trying to blend this energy with this energy. And it's gonna be hard.
What makes it hard is not having lyrical content in the music. If the song feels sad, then typically it's gonna be sad lyrics. So the music go hand in hand with the lyrics, and us not having lyrics in the music, it's kind of tough to get people to understand what it sounds like or what we're trying to say if we're not using words.
Young Jock, artist.
For people to really take the music serious or really move with the music, I gotta relate. And I think that's one of the hardest parts of being an artist is trying to figure out how to bring people together and get on one accord.
Chapter 2, Old Meets New. In a house, Cassius, Devin, and others have drinks while Chris sinks shots around a pool table.
Oh, that was crazy. See, I do the hard part.
My job is to produce. Mm-hmm. My job is to make the trap beats. Chris' job is to do the jazz. Chris is a jazz musician. It's my job and it's my calling to make sure I help all my brothers. It's my job to help them. It's my job to give them beats. They want the beats. They just afraid to ask.
For sure.
And I don't know if y'all...
I wasn't afraid. I called them 20,000 times.
I sent them a track called Red.
Red.
Yeah,
Red. Hey, Red go hard.
It go hard now.
We gonna play Red Tuesday at the show.
I've created probably seven different shows. But this one that we're gonna do is a show that we've never done before.
What songs are y'all playing, though, for real?
Man, we're gonna play Scream.
Royalty.
This is the original. Royalty. Cassius produced it. Young Dolph. We're gonna play Boot Up, of course.
We gotta really bring out all the stops. You know, we gotta go crazy. You know, we gotta really play and let them know that this is Atlanta. This is what we sound like. This is what we do. It's gonna provide a bunch of new opportunities and big old doors for us to knock down and run through. It's really big for us, definitely. One of the biggest things that we've done.
When I think of jazz, I think of the older community. I don't think of the young community. Young people don't listen to jazz. They listen to trap music. So now we get to bring the older generation into trap music. So I think trap jazz is going to bring a whole nother community together.
For sure.
In a venue, Chris and Devin play under cool purple light.
I'm not a fan of jazz music. My mother is a fan of jazz music. I've never got into it.
I'm not open to learning more about jazz. It's like something that I never was interested in hearing.
Lala Hathaway, Grammy-winning artist.
You know, if you go to places that you're supposed to be kind of classy, there's jazz, but there's not really an appreciation in this country as a whole for that.
Ray Murray, producer.
It has cobwebs on it, which is why people run from embracing it. It's the term. It's not what it is. It's your instant visualization. When you say jazz, you think of a bunch of people snapping their fingers and somebody on stage. That's an old reference. And a stereotype.
Devin and a man in a denim jacket enter a club. Black and white footage of jazz artists blends with present-day musicians playing. An older woman speaks. Dodie Smith-Simmons.
Jazz used to spell J-A-S-S. Do you know what that stood for? Jackass music. That's what white folks call it, as one white musician told me, in polite society.
Chief Shiana Tunde Ajua.
In that space, it meant one thing. In larger space, I think when people use the word jazz, really they're talking about creative improvised music.
Sonny Emery.
Jazz is different than any other genre just simply because of the freedom that it allows the player to have. There are no boundaries in jazz.
I used to watch these jazz videos of Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, Miles Davis, Jelly Roll Morton, Bagna, Art Tatum, Oscar Peterson, who was my favorite. He's my favorite piano player in the whole wide world, Oscar Peterson. I was listening to all these amazing jazz musicians, and what I really loved about them is it seemed like when they were playing, they didn't have to play a certain thing. It was like structured chaos, you know? It was like they knew what to play, but they was coming up with it as they was playing it. That's what really made me like jazz the most.
There's this air about it that you could make an argument that is arguably the most sophisticated sonic art form in the world. But there's also this air about it where it's like it comes from black people, so it can't be that sophisticated and nuanced.
Growing up as a kid and being African-American, the things that you listen to were very limited.
Robert Kahn.
On a normal day and during that time, you couldn't even put your face on an album cover, much less say you're going to go somewhere and play. Jazz got the African-American musician out into being seen, and that was done through Al Capone and all of the gangsters. And they would ask the black musicians to come in and play jazz because that's what they liked. But jazz has an origin, too. Gospel.
In a church, men sing in black suits and white ties. Congregants raise their hands.
Gospel has an origin too. The blues. Blues has an origin. Slave songs.
Gospel is the sole provider of everything that we do, because as children, we come from Sunday school.
A man with a thin mustache sings into a microphone.
Church has bred so many musicians in secular music. It's just a spiritual thing, man. You know, just God blessing us. Church is definitely like a great learning tool and a great starting point for a lot of musicians to really see if this is what they want to do in life.
When they create music, it has a different passion, it has a different soul, has a different heartbeat to it than just somebody that just, you know, they didn't grow up in church at all.
They're responding to the energy, and the vibration in the space is important. So if you ever been to a Baptist church in Louisiana, you are going to feel some things. You could actually think that you may be the most heartless person walking the planet and walk into that environment, and it's a sound bad.
Church, that's our foundation. That's what have us grounded. Sticks, Chris, and all them.
In our music, I want people to know that we're from the church.
We know where we came from.
Lil John Roberts.
I went from church gospel music to playing straight ahead jazz and then jumping into the R&B world. You know, I see these guys doing the same thing, like going from church. Now they're doing the trap stuff and all. So I like to see, you know, the variety mixed into their music.
Jazz, rhythm and blues, funk, fusion, hip hop, trap. They are all an expression from the street, from people saying, here's what we want to put into this. We want to interject this into the conversation. We want our voices heard.
What is trap music? What does it do?
Graffiti covers every inch of an abandoned structure. At night, men drive three-wheeled cars into Atlanta.
Trap music is the new pop music. Like, you don't hear too much people talking about pop no more.
A blue neon sign reads Magic City. A building emblazoned with the name Pink Pony is adorned by a pink neon stallion.
Urban music is the biggest thing right now. Everybody want to be Young Thug.
Trap music is Atlanta. That's our sound. That's how it has taken over, like, our city and our culture. You know, I love it.
A man peers through window blinds as a helicopter flies overhead. Men meet in a room where pot smoke fills the air.
The trap is hood stuff, gangster stuff, gangs and drugs and guns. And the trap is the ghetto. Once you in there, you in there. There ain't no coming out. It's a trap. The house I grew up in, literally, right across the street, was a trap house. Right next door. Like, it just was a way of life. That's all they knew. It was how to sell drugs.
You gotta be in the trap to make trap music, man.
Trouble, rapper.
You know what I'm saying? This is where this shit started from.
Trap music could be anything these days, because a lot of niggas who talk about trap music ain't been in no trap.
It did. So what trap
music? The real trap. It's about
Pee Wee Longway.
I mean, there's a whole lot of narcotics on the mixtape, man. You know what I mean? You just spend your drug lingo. You spend the street side of your lifestyle.
T.I., Grammy-winning artist.
My second album was the first time the word trap and the word music was combined. The album was meant to represent a large group of people who were doing the same shit that I was doing and wasn't nobody speaking for them at the time. You inspire them and let them know that you too could come from that wreckage and make something of the skills that you've acquired and take it somewhere else. I didn't go into making that album as thinking that the world needed trap music. I went into it thinking the niggas in the trap need trap music.
People think that it's strictly about, you know, selling drugs. It might have stemmed from that, but that's not all it is.
If it wasn't for Zaytoven, it wouldn't be a Cassius. And there's another way I met Zaytoven at church. Everything I came across was at church, 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 church. That's why I still play at church. I started making beats like Zaytoven. Everything he did, I would mimic. I would sit right there. He had an MPC. I went and bought an MPC. He would go get a Kronos keyboard. I'd go save up me some money and get a Kronos keyboard. At this time, I don't really got too much of no money, but I'm hanging with Zaytoven. So it's like, if I want to be like him, I got to mimic him.
Cassius circles as Zaytoven taps out beats on the square buttons of an Akai controller.
My definition of trap music is it's motivational music, spontaneous music. It's unpolished music.
I think people are drawn to it, number one, because of how the beat sounds. That grimy sound is the trap sound. You know, it'll make everybody dead as soon as they hear it.
DJ Toon.
Now you got effects that'll
take the music and warp it. And all the kind of filtering.
Beethoven plays the keyboard while tapping his laptop.
It's a lot of technology, a lot of plugins, a lot of different things that's really enhancing the sound, basically.
Drummer Boy.
It's the producers that are creating these new sounds, creating these new waves for new artists, really seeing the evolution. And once you've seen the evolution, you kind of can see how it's going to keep going.
From what I know of most of the jazz players who are prolific and legendary, they spent plenty of time in some traps. You know what I'm saying? So, the drug dealer and the musician has been synonymous since the beginning of time. It's a body of so much pain, struggle, but at the same time, success. When you had people like T.I. talking about stuff he was going through, and then at the same time still talking about coming up, it's not just gangster music.
I must live in left field somewhere. I must be getting old. Trap.
Man, trap jazz, I couldn't believe nobody was doing it. It reminded me of Kenny G. Remember, Kenny G would do all Janet Jackson songs, but he played it on his horn.
Well, I got a good idea why they probably don't do it. There's a lot of, you know, the old, you know, I call them the Fogey Stogies.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? They don't really want to mesh the two because they feel like jazz is to be revered and respected as, you know, jazz. It's just it's jazz.
Right.
It has a certain class to it.
Yes.
Jazz is very classy.
Right.
And so for, you know, some people, a lot of musicians and people, you know, might feel that it's classless. People might think that until they hear it and they feel it. And they see the effect that it has on people.
5 days to ATL's show. In a school, Chris walks alone through an empty hallway.
My first experience with jazz was at Columbia High School with Mr. Khan.
5 band trophies are displayed against a blue and orange wall.
Those years was important, I think.
Blue and white Busbies are kept in a locker.
That really, like, molded me and taught me how to have my own discipline in learning music.
In a music room, Chris hugs a thin older man, Robert Kahn, Chris's high school band director.
Hey, Mr. Kahn.
Ah! Oh, my God.
How are you, man? Good to see you.
Okay, now explain this trap thing to me.
All right, so basically trap, the trap part of it is it's basically the hood, you know, like growing up in the hood, there's trap houses, there's, you know, people talk, the rappers talking about trap, like, okay, like selling drugs, you know, the pimps and the prostitutes or whatever it is, whatever is going on in the hood, you know, it's color.
What's your objective?
The objective is to provide the type of music for everybody.
So now, is this more instrumental?
It's instrumental, yeah. We got some artists wanting to, you know, put dibs in on, you know, who the first rapper or singer.
It's clean.
Is. It's clean, but there'll probably be some, you know, slightly dirty, raunchy moments because we don't want to leave that out. It's a part of what's going on in our world right now.
Okay, are these negative, degrading?
No. I guess if you call, you know, partying and having a good time, you know.
We ain't referencing drugs or nothing.
No, I wouldn't put drugs in there, but I would definitely want the songs, if somebody was to put lyrics on it, I would want it to be about living your life, having fun. Yep. And we got to keep jazz in there. That's what I did want to leave out.
Now you can write this on paper there. Now.
Oh, yeah. We learned that. Yeah, we learned that in high school.
Put it on paper.
Yeah, we put it on paper. We can write it out. And,
Chris was like an isolated person. And he was real quiet, laid back. And I noticed him one day, he was banging on the piano, and I'm going, well, what are you playing?
I was playing Brian at night, anytime. The females would be like, oh my God, it's my song. Oh my God, oh my God. They would come to the piano. And he came up. He was like, all right, Mr. Moten, you feel like you want to show off? You think you just not the other? All right. And he put a blank piece of staff paper in front of me. He was like, all right, since you think you're big and bad, then, you know, won't you write out the last 4 measures of what you play?
What I told him, I said, look, you know where the keys are on the keyboards. You just got to be able to transpose what's on that paper to what your fingers are doing.
I think I almost cried, but I didn't. I was mad, though, because even the girls, it was looking like, well, you can't write music. You're not that fly, you know. You're not that dope. You're not that cute. From then on, I started learning, like, everything I could.
Let me hear something.
I got like my single that you can hear.
Chris bobs his head to the trap jazz original, Boot Up.
The melody.
Robert bows his head as he listens intently.
Still got the trap beat. Now, this is not really jazzy, but it's just a hint of it.
The keyboard supposed to be your jazz licks.
That's my jazz licks, but it's synth, so we're gonna keep it light. Okay. And then we're gonna really go into the jazz. And
having the chance to show him what I came up with in life, you know, that was kind of scary.
Robert raises his brow and gives Chris a look.
His face.
Wait a minute, now hold it.
It's me.
This you?
Man,
blues
change. Watch this.
Chris imitates playing a trumpet as Robert listens to a speaker.
Those are all jazz licks, aren't you? Whoa, look how dumb.
Those are all jazz licks. To stay true to jazz. Then we go back to 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3.
No, wait a minute.
And he was happy to know that not only was I doing jazz, but I'm doing something that works in this era.
Anybody can listen to this, man.
Anybody can.
It can go anywhere.
That's the biggest thing about it, man. Be classy and still a little bit raunchy and hood, that, a little bit, you know.
That will sell.
I really wanted to make sure that the old heads would, like, approve. It feels good for them to say, this is gonna work.
An old man with white hair and a goatee listens to music on a smartphone. Johnny Knapp, jazz pianist for Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Walker, and Billie Holiday.
I like the idea of almost a little commercial things in there that'll keep you on your toes, you know? And then also, you gotta get something that could get into a groove so the women dance.
Yes.
If women get involved, guys get involved.
Yes, sir.
If there's a girl around, there's a guy around.
Yes.
And if the girl likes to dance to it, then you're on your way.
In a strip club, dollar bills are piled on a runway. A young woman covers her bare breasts with her hand as she dances on a pole. Nearby, Cassius wears sunglasses and exhales thick smoke. Chris dances under the red bar lights. He sticks out his tongue and daps it up with another. Cassius takes another hit.
Strippers play a real big role in trap music because without the strippers, the DJs wouldn't even know about certain songs. So when I used to make trap music, first thing I used to do is get my song, I mixed it, took it to a strip club, and all the strippers started dancing to it. If you could get a girl to shake her ass to your music, you got a hit. That was weird to see them dancing off Boot Up at the strip club, but it's that trap shit. So it's like, whoa, we got a hit then, goddamn, we can run with this one.
Cassius chucks a handful of bills into the air. Gray clouds loom over downtown Atlanta, 3 days to ATL show. In studio, Devin leans against a cymbal. Behind a keyboard, Chris swigs a bottle of liquor.
I have it. This is the first time everybody's about to play together.
I'm definitely not prepared for Tuesday. We're prepared musically. We know what we want to do. But the biggest preparation of all is in the rehearsal.
Don't fuck around, man. I don't bullshit like that. So I'll do the first one, you do the second one, you do the third one. Hey! Right there. Paste that right there.
I feel a little bit detached, like, you know, it's so hard to get these guys in one room, one rehearsal, one stage.
Getting all the songs together, arranging these songs, getting all the material together, getting the band together, still trying to do whatever we have to do individually in between rehearsals and make rehearsals work, you know, setting up studio sessions, trying to get a hold of Cassius, you know, getting his busy schedule, getting my schedule, getting Chris' schedule together, you know, Chris flying in and out of the state, doing tour shows and preparing for this as well. It's a lot of stress and, you know, and a lot that comes with it.
The magic is when we come together and find the vibe and the correct chemistry to give them a great show.
Words appear over a pastel sunset. ATL show. Outside a warehouse set against thick trees, a small crowd mingles. Inside the venue, crew members set up the gear.
Man, I'm always down to hear good live music. So just to hear some people shed, that's always really inspiring to me.
I'm here to see the band. I'm here to see Debbie, really. I want to see me get down a little bit.
Trap and jazz? Okay, let's see what this is about. I mean, I really don't know.
These boys are some of the most talented boys in the city.
The crowd files into the building. In front of a keyboard, Chris exhales a puff of smoke and takes off his backpack. Cassius smirks at the crowd from behind a keyboard.
No, I brought him in.
How y'all feeling tonight, man?
Chris gets into position at his keyboard. Devin beams behind his drum kit. A trombonist plays live for the crowd. Devin rapidly plays the drums while Chris jams on the keyboard. In the crowd, people bob their heads to the music. Suddenly goes dark.
Yep, and we already knew it. And we already knew it. And we already knew it. And we already knew it.
The lights come back on.
Stuff went right. We still didn't have like a lot of the songs together. Like we still having patch issues and power issues and shit like that.
Chris got his own mind. That night, I kept saying, Chris, like, you see this shit fucking up. Let's go to the next song. So I get irritated. He know I get irritated. I'll be ready to fight. Like, man, I'm finna pop you in your mouth, bro, if you don't listen to me. Which I won't do it because he's my brother and I love him. But he irritates the fuck out of me.
I don't remember much about the beginning of that, actually. I don't. I was, like, having fun. I was lit. So I was out of there, like.
That's why we was frustrated too. Cause that nigga was so lit, bro.
Devin says, Chris looked at him and says, Devin, give me a drum beat. And says, Chris, start rolling up a blunt. Y'all make some noise real quick, make some noise. Whoa. Stop, y'all. Y'all make some noise. Make some noise. So, let's go back to the repeat. Go out. Jordan, I need something from Jordan. Ba-ba. You. Shot. Jordan.
Chris treated it like a live recording. You know, every time he heard something wrong, he was just like, nope. Come on, man. You know, we taping. We got to get it right. Oh, yeah. It was a lot of frustration. The frustration came from everybody losing sight of the music.
Devin plays the drums rapidly and watches Chris.
You ready for a seat, man? See? Go ahead. Conversation afterwards, and we all shared our opinions, and me and Devin was on the same page. Chris, you guys sound amazing. That's what he said to me. You guys sound amazing. That nigga Devin's like, nah. When you see me smiling, that's me smiling. Some of it's frustration, but some of it's just me looking at my brother like, this is a hard head joker right here. But I love him. What can I do?
Chris drives down a highway in a convertible. At a restaurant, Devin and Cassius wait at a table with alcoholic drinks.
Man, listen, man. I've been waiting for Chris for about 30 minutes. Listen, I'm about to get y'all. Look, Me and Cassie, we about to call Chris one more time, man. Look, he probably ain't even gonna answer. He gonna text me back like I'm on the phone. Of course, you know he gonna take an hour to get ready.
Chris joins them at the table.
Nothing. Eddie came.
They gonna try to come in with water.
Look at him, look with a cookie.
Hungry, man.
What's up, bro?
How you doing?
Straight.
What up, man?
David.
Good.
David,
good to see you.
Good to see you too, nigga.
Got good.
Yeah.
Shout out here talking about.
Man, you,
David, being late.
I was sleep.
What's up, man? What we doing, man? What we got to do to put this project out? Cash is trying to drop it on December 30th, whether we like it or not.
That's cool, because I want to do a show in Atlanta.
They kept asking me why the album ain't done.
They kept asking both of us, what's taking so long? Like, you feel me?
Like, yeah, fans want to know, where the album at?
I'm pretty sure that the guys in the band believe in trap jazz, but I'm pretty sure outside of me, us three, there's not one of them that's got their heart. And
it's not priority.
Yeah, I cannot ask them to always come to the studio for free. You know, I'm waiting for them. Devin, I can. I know it's a different motivation in him to make trap jazz happen. And so trap jazz ain't paying them $500 a day to pay their $1,000 rent and $200 cell phone and keep them fly every day. Then, you know, we got to do what we got to do till we get there, you know?
Okay, well, Cash is saying you just play everything yourself. Play guitar and play horns yourself.
Nah, we can get guitar, but horns and shit.
We got to get a lot of guitar.
All right, but just get horns. You just play the horns yourself.
I know you can do horns.
I need 3 days and the studio time paid for it. That's it.
And you going to be there all night?
Hell yeah. You talking about 8 hours?
I know if I call Chris, like, Chris, let's go make some beats. Chris not going to show up. He's going to have an excuse or something. I know my brother. So I let him be him. I respect him. You notice I don't bother Chris. I let Chris be Chris, and I just do as much as I can for him. I support him.
I think I take it more seriously than I should sometimes. You know, like getting mad that certain things is not happening. And like sometimes I sit back and be crying, you know, because I'm thinking like, nigga, I'm
30. How come you don't ever share this frustration with me, though?
I'm 32. Because like, it's a matter of like, you know how we, you know where we came from, you know. My dad, your dad, you know what they taught us.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We ain't no pussies. We ain't no crybabies.
Chris frowns at Devin. Later, Chris ambles toward an elevator and presses the call button.
I'm capable of letting people down. And I didn't like the way that felt at all. Because I remember what it felt like, too.
In a hotel room, Chris sits by a window.
With me and my father, it was love. I trusted him that his love was going to be there.
Young Chris and his dad sit in front of a piano.
I always sat with him at church on the organ. I sat right next to him. I wanted to be like him, and the fact that I was playing like him and sounding like him, it really made me feel like that was more of why, you know, God chose him to be my father and me to be his son, is that we have the same type of calling.
Chris's small fingers press the keys as his dad plays.
I do remember being confused and lashing out and sometimes and being, you know, out of control and, you know, disrespecting my mother. And but I was definitely angry that, you know, my father wasn't there. Because, you want your father there. You know, you want him to be there. So why he would lie and say he's going to be there if he's not? That's a pretty fucked up way to feel, especially for your hero. The who's next, you know, who else will I lose like that? That'll send you down a dark road of beating yourself up and really refusing to try something else and try to go back at it.
In the basement, Chris sits in front of a grand piano.
His father was not around when Christopher was a child, and the family went through years of intense hardship.
To watch Chris go through the things that he went through, as his mom, I didn't want to see that. I didn't know what to give him, you know? And sometimes he would just say a prayer.
In Chris's bedroom, he sits alone on the foot of his bed. A Tupac poster adorns the wall.
You know, some of that love that I'm supposed to be experiencing with my father is not happening.
He screams, then smashes cassettes on the floor.
I just held it in a lot, you know, because there was no way to deal with it. Like, can't fix it, can't change it, so just let it be. I'm not gonna let nobody see that. I'm not gonna let anybody experience that part of me. Like, you're not gonna be able to manipulate that. You're not gonna be able to know my downfalls and know my anger and my issues and then use it against me.
I know that sometimes, as human beings, we have to go through some things to cause us to be stronger, to cause us to think differently. It's hard to see when it's your child going through, but I know that it's all in his making.
I told Chris, you need to learn how to follow. I said, you don't listen. They always say that to be a great leader, you got to be a great father. I don't know nobody Chris has followed. Chris is in his own world. He's a hell of a musician. He got to learn how to follow first.
In a house, the man with gravity-defying dreads plays the trumpet. Chief Shion Atunde Ajua, jazz trumpeter and producer. Chris and Shion dap it up, then hug.
Yeah. What's up, man? Christian Scott. I've been following him for probably like 2 years. I never met him. He's very sensitive to what he's playing. He doesn't just spit out a note just to have sound or just to play, which I do a lot, and some other people, we're still learning to do that. I would definitely take something like that from him, and that makes him, to me, a really, really great musician, a strong force in the industry.
Yeah, what did you hear?
Well, so I was on YouTube and saw some clips there.
Okay, so probably like Boot Up, maybe Red. That's all stuff.
No, Boot Up, definitely. Boot Up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think about it?
Man, it's dope. What you're doing is, like, for me, it's really important in this moment, too, to show the synergy between those cultural spaces within a cultural space.
Yes.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Yes,
I think a lot of times people, when they think of, you know, what's going on right now in the newer movement, they like to separate those cultures as if they are, like, mutually exclusive things.
Right.
And it's the same people. So finding a way to sort of to speak through generations and context within a culture is really important. Yeah. So I'm glad about what you're doing.
When I listen to trap music and I listen to Elvin Jones, I can hear that those rhythms, all of those things are West Africa rhythms. To me, I know that ancestral recall exists. Right? That's a real thing. It's more than the color of your eyes that's being rewritten when you're brought here. This is why people that were denied the ability to play drums still ended up being so rhythmic 300, 400 years later.
Chris plays the piano and Shion plays the trumpet.
And then summertime is like...
These two chords.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Right. I mean, right? So the thing is I mean, we use summertime as an example, the synergy between those spaces. You don't have to look hard to find those things because the cultural expression is still the same culture.
I want everybody to be able to play this music. It's more of an idea, a movement for everybody to cling to because we've always been a part of the blues,
gospel turning into jazz, into rock and roll, into pop music, rap, hip-hop, music all over the world, we need to be able to connect. And everybody has their own idea of how they want to contribute their music to the world, and this is just mine.
Chapter 3, Legacy. In a studio bathed in blue light, Chris lights up a blunt, then exhales thick smoke. His cracked iPhone charges on a table nearby while he has Devin on speaker.
I just found out we're going on first, so we gotta light that bitch up, bro. We gotta light it up. I think it'll be an explosion if we do it first, like.
Chris straps on a keytar.
It'll be clean, tight, and hit them.
We received a call to play for Quincy's tribute in L.A. The call was crazy because prior to that, I was working on two or three of Quincy Jones's songs, and I was going to trap them out like I did the other ones. So when he called and he said, man, just take some of his songs, just do what you do, that was already crazy because it lined up. Again, just like do what you love, stay at it, because these opportunities might just catch you in the right time.
It's going to be an amazing time because we're mixing our stuff with his music. So it's going to be cool, like, to do, like, all of his hits, but put our own spin on it, which is the trap jazz.
You know me, you know Quincy is, like, my favorite from the beginning. Just being in high school and knowing that he was, like, the greatest musician in the world, really.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Khan used to always hype him up. He talked about a lot of other musicians, but it seemed like when he wanted us to, like, really be inspired by somebody, he would always use Quincy. Movies, TV, pop music, jazz, old school, Frank Sinatra. Like, damn, how much was he working every day?
I'm excited about it. Early, I watched the Quincy Jones documentary and got inspired to see how much work he had done in such little time. It made me want to go back to doing the trap jazz. So trap jazz, it wasn't paying me no money. So it just wasn't my focus. But now me seeing the bigger picture of it is my focus.
Cassius drives Chris to the airport.
Quincy's also like the definition of like what you can do with potential. Most people, we never live up to our potential. We never really reach it.
The sun sets over Echo Park Lake behind the Los Angeles skyline. At center staging, the band members try instruments.
He clearly would know what the fuck I'm doing.
One, two, three, four.
You guys are playing at night.
He'll know where I'm coming from and how I want to do it and why I'm doing it. He's going to know that because he comes from that.
At Jam Jam, the Quincy Jones tribute show, a standing crowd surrounds the band. Chris looks over to Quincy, who nods.
I need me him. That's really gonna be fun, man. I can't wait for it. I'll just make sure I'm not nervous, huh? Make sure I'm relaxing.
Kelmo Lovano, founder of Jam Card.
A special inspiration for me and our team and our community is here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, make some noise for Mr. Quincy Jones.
Quincy, an older bald man, waves to the crowd. He calls to Chris, then raises his fist.
Make some noise for trap jazz.
Chris bobs his head to the beat, and people in the audience do the same. Chris grins, then beckons the crowd with a wave.
I saw this moment. A lot of people was trying to talk to him, but he was just looking and just listening. He heard that drums, he heard the brass, he heard his song, but he heard it differently than probably he's ever heard it before.
Chris picks up the keytar and pulls the strap over his shoulder.
It's an original song called Buddha. Everybody say Buddha!
We'll be right back.
people in the crowd move to the music. Quincy and a young woman dance in their seats. Quincy claps.
He saw the people jumping, and I think that made him at least pay attention and say, oh, this is different. And that's what I would like to believe he was thinking. So it was mind-blowing.
Elmo introduces Chris to Quincy.
Meeting him, talking to him, having, like, fun conversation with him telling stories, like, it was crazy. It was definitely mind-blowing. I couldn't believe that it was happening, actually. That was a treasure, yeah. I'll never forget that, for sure. First time.
In a studio, the bandmates play their instruments.
We're growing as a group, playing-wise, a lot. We're about to start working on some new music, too. Like, me, him, and Cassius, we actually was in the studio not too long ago, and we came up with some new stuff.
New stuff.
We still got to get it mixed and mastered, you feel me? Like, we still mixing certain stuff.
That's really all I'm doing is editing drums right now. Taking every little beat and making sure it is where it need to be.
We haven't finished the album. We ain't even shot the deal. We ain't even tried to shop the deal. That's the first step, getting a deal for it. So that's the beginning stage. That's the good part. But now we just got to get the album finished.
It's just up to Chris to do his part. Period.
At Chris's home, he and his dad listen to a boombox. Chris bobs his head and grins wistfully.
Remember that one?
Mm-hmm. This is the first one? It's the first album?
Mm-hmm.
It's the first, yeah. You wouldn't play this one. Yeah.
You like that one?
Yeah, I remember this one.
In the prison system, I was fortunate enough to have a lot of equipment given to me. I had people that still believed in me. And all I had to do was ask for whatever I needed. And eventually I ended up with a studio in prison. I actually recorded a gospel CD while in prison. A lot of talented guys were in prison. Some, many of my friends are out now, and a lot of them will, you know, they'll never get out. Or it'll be many more years before they will get out. But I take great pride in I take great pride in knowing that I left something there for them. My physical body left them after 20 years, but I left things in place where these guys can keep polishing their gifts and keep working hard.
Of course, I know that's Amazing Grace, but you didn't name anything different, though, right?
I decided to call it Grace Amazing.
Grace Amazing. Flipped it, okay. And you had limited equipment to work with, whereas in most studios today, it's a, you know, big console.
Oh, yeah. It was.
Laptop, big computer.
The bare minimum.
And then you played all the instruments. You went from piano to the organ.
Right. Well, I did all
drums.
The music first.
Did the music first.
I laid down, you know, each instrument.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't always right the first time, but then you just do it over and over until you get it right. And then once I mix it down to where I was satisfied, then I would work on the vocals.
Grace Amazing was, I think, one of the first songs that I heard that you recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like this. It wasn't fully produced with all the instruments. It was just you on piano. And I remember learning it back to back. Me and Josh just sitting back, rewinding it, the little chord changes you would do.
Oh, yeah.
That was all like, you know, explosive to us. So you would always not really teach us, like in a sense of like a teacher or a professor. You was really just giving us your sound or the elements that you would use, you know.
Well, I always
chord changes.
Want you to understand why I did what I did.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted you to have your own style.
And it got to the point where when I got most of your moves down and started playing them the way you played them, people would notice it.
Mm-hmm.
They would notice it. Some people would come, like a mother in the church would come and say, you know, you sound just like your daddy. And I'm like, you ain't heard him play in 15 years. How do you know that? But there is that church sound.
Absolutely.
I finally got down. Yeah.
I love to hear him play. I enjoy watching him play, and I was extremely proud that this was my kid. I admire your durability.
Mm.
You have endured a lot, a lot.
Some your fault, some not your fault.
Absolutely.
A lot of things you went through I didn't want you to go through. But I saw how you stuck in there. I think that's going to carry you a long way because you're durable. Mm. You know how to stick it out, mm. even when it gets rough. Of course, I'm always on your side. Even when I tell you I'm not, mm-hmm. I'm always on your side. Always.
That means a lot.
And I want better for you than I ever had for myself. And to me, that's the evidence of real love when you can celebrate somebody else as if it were yourself. When you desire more of a person than you desire for yourself. You taught me how to be strong. You taught me how to stay focused. Even in the midst of things that I'm going through today, I can kind of look at you and see how you stay focused. Even when things are at their worst, you just keep going.
Chris nods with tears in his eyes.
Before it's all said and done, we're doing the album together. Deal?
After I get the Phantom.
Deal?
After I get the Phantom.
We'll see about that. Maybe we'll rent one. I'll rent you one and we'll do the album that week.
In a flashback, Chris's dad shows him how to play piano. In the present, Chris waits on the subway platform.
I watched Chris change over the past couple of years. His music, his energy, his priorities. He's getting older. Like, we not kids no more. You know what I mean? Like, we ain't out here just fucking around no more. Like, shit has to make sense.
I definitely learned to, at least as much as I can, try to show up before everybody else in the band. Not being there is keeping us from making certain decisions that were very important that I didn't realize that they cared enough for me to keep me in the loop about.
We got a show tonight, baby. We on the way to the stew. That's when the best shit comes. Every time.
The pandemic.
It had a bad effect, but then it had a good effect too. I was able to get like a lot of my own personal music done. I want to be one of those guys when song come on, you go crazy, but I made the song, you know? Something that's going to be here for forever, even when I'm long gone. And I was able to spend time with my daughter, too. I have a daughter now. Two daughters, actually.
In studio, Devin dances while Chris plays the keyboard.
Our music is unique. Can nobody else do it or duplicate it?
If we get signed to a major record label, cool. If not, cool. We'll still be able to do it independently, too.
If you could speak to your 10-year-old self right now, what would you say to him?
I would tell him, don't wait. Don't wait for what everybody else thinks that you should be doing. Don't wait for your family. Don't wait for people who you thought were your friends. Do it for yourself first. And then try to help everybody else. Everybody who knows me knows that I don't want fame. I just want it to be about music.
Got a new sound, you just gotta hear it.
What the tempo?
My legacy to just be around for like my children. I used to go to the studio and watch my dad and BS shows, or he used to have me like on the Grammys. I want them to see that you can do whatever you pretty much want to do.
Cassius dances his way into a room where the band records.
Trap Jazz is, it's gonna be real, real big and real huge. There's no limits to it. I think it's gonna probably be one of the biggest things in the next 5 years. It's gonna almost be like how hip hop was in the 90s. It's gonna take off and everybody's gonna start doing it their own ways.
I want people to really enjoy music with their heart and their soul, because music is very healing. It's very spiritual, it's very powerful. If they can dance from it, if they can play the music after losing someone or just in the moment, I want to serve people musically.
Really good music, when it enters you, it's like the one thing other than God that can change the way you feel without your permission.
that was new to me, to see your child doing what he was born to do, to see him absolutely free.
Chris bites his lip and flashes six fingers.
That'll work.
Cut to black. Credits roll. Chris Moten, Devin Stix Taylor, Cassius J. Directed by Sade Clack and Joseph. Credits continue. Copyright 2023 ESPN, all rights reserved. Audio description by Point 360, written by Michael Rodriguez, narrated by Tansy Alexander. Logos, Jam Card Films, Highway West Entertainment, Out of Many. Hulu Originals,